Oh, we're recording. All right, ready? I didn't give me the go. Here we go. Ready?
This is Jay's Nate. First time. It's the first time. Yeah.
Nate.
Welcome to the Best Hour of Their Day podcast with your hosts, Jason Fernandez.
And me, Jason Ackerman. With more than 20 years in the business,
as both coaches and affiliate owners,
our passion is to help create world-class affiliates
and coaches by building
better
boxes.
Welcome to
the best hour of your day.
We are here with the legend, Steve Haydock. Within the walls of Best Hour, he is referred to as the GOAT because he is the greatest of all time. And we're going to talk about his journey as how he became the GOAT. Because you're not just born the GOAT, right, Steve?
Doesn't happen that way. You have to earn that. It has to be earned.
And Fern and I have known you over a decade now, but aside from your expertise as a CrossFit coach and your time on staff, there's so much more about you. So let's start from the beginnings. Tell us about your upbringing, your childhood, because I think that's a lot of how you've gotten to be where you are today.
Why do you talk funny?
So apparently, I'll put this out there. There is this whole part of the world outside of the United States of America. And that's difficult for some people to understand. I get it. Like, it's America's a big place. But back in the day, there was this, there was this small country called the United Kingdom, Great Britain. Right. And that's where I'm from. And we had something to do with how things happened out here in the U.S. I can't exactly remember what happened, but I know at some point we decided to leave to go and deal with some other problems somewhere else because things were getting a little rowdy out here. There was some tea involved and stuff. That's all I kind of really know about it. But so originally from the UK and upbringing, I'm one of five children. I'm the youngest. I grew up very close to London, England, and did good in school, studied hard. I played a ton of sport growing up. Some sports, again, you guys might not have heard of one called rugby, which is kind of like American football, but we don't have to wear all the pads because we're a little bit more robust, I think.
I played rugby in college, Steve.
Did you?
So you know.
It doesn't count. Oh, okay, you were scrum half. So you had a position that wasn't just like
– I played rugby after
towels
college.
Or whatever.
What'd you play? You know what Fern played.
I played rugby after college.
So I played.
Yeah.
I did.
Did you really?
I had one of my roommates from college was stationed here. I played for the Norfolk Blues. I played for one season. It was fucking love rugby, dude.
It's a great game.
It's a great.
Full disclosure, did not make the full season because I was a complete mess by the end of it. Like, I was injured at least five times in that season. Mm. Like,
it's tough. It's a tough game.
It's a tough
game. I'm just weak.
So, I played a ton of sport. I played I played basically all through my school, schooling up to when I left school to go to college. And then when I got to college, I kind of was a little bit burned out on the team sport side of things. And that's when I got into like learning to fight. And I started with some stand-up martial arts and some Thai boxing and that kind of stuff. And I really enjoyed it, like the individual challenge of it. And then I went to college and earned a law degree. I have a degree in English law, which was my first degree. And then from there, I did a postgraduate in education. So I became a qualified teacher in the UK. Did some more training in specializing in like language and literacy, like how to use language most effectively to help develop literacy like throughout different age groups. And I also did some, I did a sports psychology qualification as well. And all of that kind of journey took me into teaching for a little bit. So I was teaching in schools. At the same time, I really fell in love with jiu-jitsu. So I was training a ton of jiu-jitsu and ultimately, I ended my teaching career as a principal of a school, which I did for a couple of years. Like I kind of got fast tracked because I was good with the admin and management of people and, principal of a school for a little bit. And then, I basically walked away from a teaching career to run my CrossFit gym. This was like, opened my gym 2007 and then kind of walked away from teaching like 2009, 2010. and I was running a gym full time. And that was my journey that got me into CrossFit. And, you know, met a ton of great people along the way. And that was the kind of early days, I suppose.
Well, let's take a step back. I mean, that's a tremendous amount of knowledge you have. I mean, I don't even think I knew you had a law degree.
I think I only recently found this out, like maybe like a couple of months ago. And I was like, wait, Steve? Mm-hmm. So a law degree, is it kind of like the States where you can go to law school, but you're not an attorney? Or there's like a distinct, there's a you're an attorney if you don't take the bar, I guess, and maybe a lawyer if you do. I don't know if that's accurate or not. But is there a bar in the UK?
In the UK, it's distinguished with like a solicitor, which is you don't take the bar, or a barrister if you do take the bar exam. That's how it's distinguished within UK law. And ultimately, like I did my law degree and I qualified, you know, I got my law degree. And really about halfway through that, I kind of worked out that I didn't want to be a practicing lawyer, which was, you know, it was part of the journey. There were elements to it. Like I enjoyed the intellectual challenge of it. I enjoyed the problem solving on it. But for me, I wanted to be, you know, I think my passion always was with education, like teaching people. Like I, you know, my mother was a teacher for 40 plus years, and I think I was trying to avoid it. But ultimately, I think the teaching and coaching side of thing was really my calling, and I worked that out. But I, you know, I finished my degree, and then from there I was like, okay, well, actually I'm going to go and get my postgraduate in education, and I'll go into teaching, which was super fulfilling. Like it was really enjoyable. But the nature of that role, you know, and this is common in a lot of businesses and companies, is that as you progress in terms of management, you're actually doing less of the thing you love, which is the actual teaching and coaching of people. And then that itch was being scratched for me through CrossFit and Jiu-Jitsu, because it was all about interacting with the people and actually teaching them skills and making a difference. So that was a big part of me then transitioning into that role.
Is it true that you were a principal?
So if you practice...
Yes, I was. I finished my teaching career as a principal of a school.
Principal, yeah. Steve.
And when you practice English law, you have to wear one of those wigs?
Well, I just wear one of them, and generally, like, so you'll frequently find me in my house in a powdered white wig, and I have a red coat. I have a red coat and a musket that I'll walk around. I'll be walking. Sometimes I'll go out and walk my dogs in the local park, and they'll sit, that's the English guy in his red coat trying to take over again. So, you know.
Yeah, hasn't gotten past 1776. So, yeah. Okay, let's talk about your CrossFit journey now. That's great. That's kind of like kudos, like massive education. Clearly, in addition to that, like the stick-to-itiveness of all that schooling. And clearly also something to be acknowledged is the trend of whatever you do, you rise to the top.
Yeah, like
Flowmaster, black belt, principal. I mean, everything you do, you wind up being the best. The GOAT.
So, yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, that's for sure. I mean, trust me, there are things I suck at as well. You know,
you don't. Name one.
Coming up with things I suck at. See, that's one thing. Yeah.
Exactly.
I think my nature is, Jay, is that when I'm definitely an early adopter of things, right? So I was very early on the jiu-jitsu wagon. And then I was also, for the UK, I was early on the CrossFit wagon. You know, 2007.
Really early. I mean, you were the second person to do CrossFit in the UK. Is that true?
I don't think I was the second person, but I was definitely early. That came out of, you know, I have a definite personality type of when I find something that works, I'm like, okay, suddenly this is solving the problem and it works and it's efficient. I'm going to go all in on that thing. And that was the nature of when I found jiu-jitsu for the first time. Like I've been training other martial arts, but my first exposure to jiu-jitsu was something like, hang on a second. There's this person that I'm training with who I outweigh by, you know, 70 pounds. And he's kicking my butt. I'm going all in on this. And then when I found CrossFit, it was the same thing of like, you know, I really thought I was fit. until I tried this thing, and suddenly it's like not only a whole different level of fitness, but also it's so much more efficient. So now I'm like, well, now I'm going all in. And it, you know, it was such an easy switch to for me to flick, because my personality is always like, hey, if it's efficient and it gives me great results, then I'm going to do this thing. Like, there's no negotiation. And if I have to switch a ton of stuff out to make it happen, like I literally did my first CrossFit workout, and once I had had that experience, I'm like, okay, where do I take my level one? I'm like, I'm in for this. You know, it was that one experience. And I was super lucky that I, you know, when I got on CrossFit.com, I believe it was the first level one outside of the US, which was 2007, I believe, in Manchester, the UK. And, you know, Coach Glassman showed up with a ton of rock star people, and we had like 90 something people that level one in Manchester. And it was 90 plus people. Ton of people that, you know, you guys know as well. Simon Jones was on it. You know, Carl Stedman was there. He'd already got his level one because he had flown out and taken it in San Diego, I believe. So he was the kind of point of contact for that. And, you know, all those early European CrossFit people, a lot of people who went on to be on seminar staff were on that level one. And, you know,
same in the US, right?
Yeah.
You look back in the US early ones, and it's Amundsen and Annie Sakamoto and, you know, other Bosman, you know, Bergner, even legends.
Yep. And it was like, that was such a, that weekend was such a life-changing experience. Like anyone, you know, all of our cohort, all of our peers, you know, will tell you the same thing. The level one was a life-changing experience because of not only the education, but the experience, but probably most importantly, because of the connection with other people. Like not only the connection with the participants, but how good the seminar staff were at making connections.
I was going to ask you that, Steve, like right? what, and, like, I cannot think of another like seminar or workshop or anything that I've ever been to that has people leave there and they're like, oh, I'm going to fucking go do this for the rest of my life. And they're just like, it's just like so quickly. I mean, it's a really interesting observation, particularly having done it for so long. You're like, man, this thing is really sticky.
Mm. It is. And it's, you know, I'm sure in like 10 years, 20 years time, you could probably do a really interesting like psychological study of the group dynamic associated with CrossFit, like doing the difficult thing, you know, which is part of it, but then also the nature of the investment of the people around you in your success, which is, I don't think you find that in that many places these days of like, you know, hey, I'm talking very much about CrossFit right. when it's done right, because, you know, we all know that there are environments where that isn't the case. But I think when you have affiliates and you have experiences where like, we're all coming together to do this really hard thing. And even though I'm trying to like win or do well, this person is equally as invested in my success as I am. That becomes a very, very powerful tool for retention and keeping people around, because you can't find that.
You find it anywhere, to be honest with you. I mean, maybe in certain small components of highly elite military units is be like the only other place where I think you would find something remotely similar.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and well, jiu-jitsu as well. I think there's a reason a lot of CrossFitters are drawn to jiu-jitsu, right? It's a similar community, you know, shared suffering. Obviously, your fitness helps, all those kind of things. So back to your level one, what you mentioned, like, you know, being introduced to other people. What's like one or two of the moments that stood out to you at your level one?
So one of the biggest things was just the culture. Like, and I know, you know, the Best Hour team, you know, the culture within Best Hour is so refreshing. Like it's incredible. And it reminds me completely of my exposure to CrossFit, you know, 2007, which was this no bullshit, we're going to get stuff done and we're going to have a ton of fun along the way approach. And that's what I remember from my level one of like, we're here to absolutely work hard. We're here to learn, but equally we're going to give each other like a hard time in the best possible way, because you know, we actually are not taking ourselves too seriously, but we want to enjoy ourselves and we're invested in each other. And that was the biggest thing that I left with, of like, man, these people were crazy fit, crazy smart in how they communicated, but they were never taking themselves too seriously. Like, it was always, you know, it was that kind of oxymoron of someone who's so good at something, but is like so humble and like down to earth at the same time, which again, I think is a really rare blend these days to find those two things in, you know, in business or in life or whatever, because generally what happens is when people get really good at something, they start to develop an arrogance, right? There's an arrogance associated with it. And it was the opposite with my exposure to CrossFit. It was like, yeah, I'm really, really fucking good at this thing. And you know what? I'm just going to stick around and have a good time at the same time, because by doing that, they actually made, you know, this group of 90 people who honestly were a little bit, you know, timid and nervous. It just made them feel at home. And it was like, hang on a second. Yeah, we're doing this hard thing, but it's so much fun. And that's a rare blend.
That is, you know, same with jiu-jitsu, right? Like, not to go back to that, but you are, you know, experienced there as well. But it's like, you rarely meet arrogant black belts. Right? And same thing with CrossFit. Like, those that are arrogant, those that are cocky, are rarely the best at the box. They're the ones that maybe think they're the best at the box, but they're not the ones, you know, that show up and throw down a 2-minute Fran.
Yeah. Yeah.
So from your level one, what was next? There, you know, like you said, there were only a handful of you doing it. Where'd you even begin to do CrossFit?
So I started off just working out in my house and sometimes going to like a local Globo gym and trying to do the thing. And then when I got my level one, I'm just like, I'm going to pull the trigger. And I had a space that I was using for jiu-jitsu, and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to start doing CrossFit here as well. I'm going to get some equipment. Like, kind of, I got a guy who was training jiu-jitsu with me, who was a steel like fabricator, and he came in and just welded pull-up bars to all my like girders, my cross beams in my jiu-jitsu gym. So it didn't take any of my floor space, but I had all these pull-up bars like running, you know, across the space. And I had like puzzle mats that I would pull up, and then
those were the worst.
Yeah, right.
Those were the first flooring. They would split as you were using them. Yeah.
So, you know, I couldn't even get bumper plates at that point. It was super difficult to even track down like Olympic barbells and all that kind of stuff. So I just started finding whatever I could. And I was lucky because I had a handful of people from my jiu-jitsu gym that were kind of already keen to give this a go, right? They were like, okay, well, we like doing hard things. You are now doing this hard thing, so we're going to follow you for the ride and see what happens. And that kind of began the organic growth of my affiliate. And you know, and so that began 2007. And then it, you know, I definitely wasn't the smartest gym owner at that point. I made a ton of mistakes. And then I was kind of, my gym was ticking along. I was still teaching. And then ultimately I got out of teaching. And around that time, I also went and signed up for the old level 2/new level 4, which I did in 2010. And I believe it was the last one they ever did, which was in a place called Basel in Switzerland. And I showed up to that level 2 with no idea what I was meant to be doing. Like, I was like, oh, this is, you know, 2 is 1 more than 1. This is the logical next step. I should go and do this thing. Didn't even really know what I was signing up for. And then I just got like the biggest reality check within about 20 minutes of being within that experience. And that was great for me because I was suddenly like, oh, hang on a second. There's layers to this. And my mindset was like, now I've got to work out real quick how to be successful at this thing I've signed up for. And that 2-day experience was a roller coaster.
Who was like there teaching that? Me.
So, yeah. So I had Chuck, EC, and Boz were the
it's like an easy crew.
Yeah. Yeah. So I thought, right, super easy. And like, and you know, I've told people this story before, but I went into that, that experience, Jay, like you'll know as well. Like the first thing that happens is you kind of got like a 20-minute, 30-minute kind of variation of the foundations lecture of like, okay, well, you've got to be good at these six criteria. And then immediately I was kind of thrown into doing practical drills. And, you know, there wasn't really a much preparation for that. But what I do remember clearly is me being a teacher and a coach for a good number of years, I went into that environment definitely confident, right? So when they asked for someone to do the first coaching drill, I was like, I got this, you know, put my hand in the air. I'm like, here, I'm going to show these people what's up when it comes to coaching some CrossFit right now. And they asked me to coach the front squat, and I walked into the middle of the circle and demoed my first rep. So, hey, we're going to do the front squat here. You guys watch me. And it was EC walked in, tapped me on the shoulder and was like, that is undoubtedly the worst front squat demonstration I've ever seen. Like literally just dropped the hammer on me right there, shut me down and was like, you're done. Like, get out. And sent me like kind of back to the edge. And like a lot of that, I'm sure, was just to like set the tone of we're going to put you through it this weekend. But like my response to that was kind of visceral. Like I was like, oh, hang on a second. I felt like I was just like, oof. And what it did for me was it suddenly reset this kind of almost primal response in me of like, I've got to learn as much as I fucking can in the next, you know, 8 hours or whatever it is, so I can actually pass this thing. And I, like, it just became like I was just absorbing everything I could from every angle. And, you know, it was a roller coaster for sure. I think we had 22 people on that one, and two of us passed it.
I was going to say, that sounds about right. Hold on real quick, Jay, because I want to bring this
here
up.
It is.
What you just highlighted there, I think, is like the people that pass, and if I think about most of them, you know, minus Jay, they're like super, super high EQ, like very socially aware, because like in that environment, in that old level two environment, there wasn't a lot of, I wouldn't say they're not setting you up for success, but like, unless you could watch and almost immediately mimic what you were experiencing, both not just from a technical standpoint, but from a tonality standpoint, from a how physically you carry yourself. Like if you couldn't just make yourself into that person, even for like a short period of time, like you just wouldn't make it.
100%. Exactly right. Yeah. And it was interesting because like I'm very observant. I like to watch and I like to kind of like pick up on what's going on. And that, you know, there was a whole category of people that when that kind of first, like I would say, attitude adjustment happened, it like almost shut them down. It was like, woof, they just went into this like cocoon, right? For me, it was like, I just opened up and I was actually like every single person that got feedback, I was writing their feedback down as well. Like every single thing that was happening, I'm like, hang on a second, I'm going to listen to what's happening right here and I'm going to write this down and I'm not making that mistake in the assessment tomorrow. Whereas others were just disconnected. I was like fully engaged in everything that was happening and taking as much as I could. And I think that ultimately that's what led me to be successful in the assessment.
Here's the question. Which was harder? The one you and I passed?
Yeah.
Or the current L4?
Because look. Like, yeah, yeah.
Go ahead.
Undoubtedly, it was the old level two.
Thank you.
Significantly. Like if the level two were around now, it would be the level five. Undoubtedly.
I think that's what we should have. There should be the level five. Because like you said, two people.
I think the brutal nature of it probably makes that accurate, right? Like there's a certain level of
Cody.
Level of humility and a certain level of this has got to happen that environment either elicits or it doesn't. Where that the level four now is very challenging. As the only person here who's taken it, but it's not near, it's has n- that old level too, and I watched them, right? And I when I was like getting ready to go into that hopper, they like canned it and they changed it, and I never got a chance to take that one because I was at CrossFit Virginia Beach at the time, and I had watched them. It was so harsh. Like, that environment was so harsh. Most people just couldn't survive that for just from an ego standpoint.
Yeah, and I think that's why it was a brutal revelation of character. It really was, of like, can you go through this and like deal with your own insecurities and then still come out and learn and then perform to a very, very high standard at the end of it in the assessment. You know, it was very deliberate. I don't think there was anything that happened in that experience that was
right
in any way by accident. Like, it was definitely designed to reveal character, you know, and it did that.
So, you know, like Steve said, well, you said 2 of 22 passed. You know, you and who else? Do you remember who else passed?
I don't remember who else it was, actually, but I remember a lot of people losing their mind when they came out. Yeah, like, a lot of people were really upset, but I can't remember who the other person was on mine that passed.
Well, because I think two things. One, we didn't know what good or bad coaching was at the time. And I also will say this, like, HQ had no idea what they were doing at the time. That's why it was so hard to pass. Like, there was no reference. Like, now you go to the assessment, you know, I need to hit these things. It was like, we don't know what is good or bad.
Yeah.
And like you said, Brent, it is a lot of like EQ, like, cool, I can adapt and make some changes, and you got to be paying attention to the feedback that guy or that girl was getting. But I will say, other than whoever passed with you, like, most of the people that passed that became seminar staff.
Hey team, I'm Steve Haydock, CrossFit Level 4 coach, CrossFit seminar staff, Flowmaster, affiliate owner since 2007. I joined Affiliate U and Best Hour of the Day team because I could see the undoubted commitment to affiliate success and the wealth of talent that the team had already assembled. If you're an affiliate owner and you haven't checked out Affiliate University and all that Best Hour of the Day has to offer to you as an affiliate, you're missing out. Check it out today.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, I think it was a test of adaptability. It was like, can you adapt on the fly and then take this information and perform to a very high level? And, you know, most people that went through that, like, if they didn't end up on seminar staff, they definitely had a run at doing it. You know, they definitely were in the internship process at some point. You know, so yeah, it was an interesting experience for sure. But like, the thing that I always loved about it, you know, is I like that it gave me like a hard reset. It was like, okay, you know, you think you're doing this, but now suddenly you get this completely fresh perspective, and suddenly it's, you get this huge jump in an ability to grow again of like, oh, actually there's a lot more to this. And all the greatest coaches in the world need that. And not only do they need it, they crave it. They crave that constant like reset of like, okay, we're here, but there's always a place to go with this, and yeah, like layers to peel back.
It's, there's a lot to be gained by forced humility. Meaning like walking in and somebody's like, yeah, that sucks really hard shit. And you're just like, oh God, you know?
Yeah.
And I think as you get better at something, that gets harder and harder to find, right? Like, as you get more proficient at a skill or a task, it gets harder and harder to find the person that's much better than you who can really kind of like embarrass you, for lack of better terms, meaning they're just like, oh, you're still like a child compared to what I can do. And you're like, oh, okay, let me go back to the drawing board here. You know, having walked into this experience thinking I'm pretty proficient, and now I'm like, oh, I'm wildly deficient in whatever this is.
And I think all of us as well would agree that one of the greatest gifts that all three of us experienced is having that applied to us as we went through our journey with seminar stuff, right? It was the fact that we were always being asked to perform to a higher standard. There was never a finished product. There's always stuff you could do better. That was, you know, and that ultimately served all three of us really well because it molded us into, you know, really good coaches. And, you know, I'm always grateful for that, even though there were definitely times early on in my time on seminar stuff where the feedback, it hurt a little bit. Ultimately it caused a great result for me because it allowed me to, you know, progress through and, you know, give great lectures and run great groups, and then ultimately be able to pass that information on and help others do the same thing, which was, you know, moving into the Flowmaster role. Is that big part of that is helping people grow and evolve. And a lot of that comes through having, you know, definitely challenging and sometimes difficult conversations with people, but knowing that it's always for the greater good of them and the experience.
Two things you brought up there. One is that just that harsh, I'm pretty sure the first demo role I ever had on seminar staff, I was fired from, like right there on the spot. I had the GHD demo and we were reviewing it during lunch, and Sheree Chan was the flow, and she watched it and she's like, no, you're not doing that. Like, you suck. And I was like, oh shit. Okay. I got to go figure out how to do this correctly. And that I always took demonstrations super seriously after that. And most people on seminar staff, like, of all, they're like, hey, you give really good demos. I was like, yeah, when you get your face blown off on your first attempt ever, it's like a hard reset there. Be like, hey dude, like, get your shit together. You've not earned that yet. And the second thing on that is, like, I always think about that too, what you brought up, it's not necessarily the harshness, but I try to bring that level of critique to the gym owners that we work with, because it's so important for them, I think, to experience so that they can also transmit that into their staff, because a lot of people just have culture problems. As much as they think the community is great, the culture is not great in a lot of CrossFit boxes.
Absolutely. 100%. And, like, honestly, one of the biggest skills, you know, or the most important abilities for gym owners to have with, you know, to forge out their ongoing success is feeling 100% confident saying to someone on their team, hey, that's not good enough. Like, that, this has got to be better. Right. And I think a lot of people struggle with those conversations, either because they're, you know, the conflict, they feel like it's a conflict nature, or they feel like it's a, you know, we're telling someone they're doing something bad. But when you reframe your perspective on feedback and those conversations, this is not a bad thing. I'm invested in you doing this better for not only you to be better, but also to give a better experience to my members and my clients, and what we're trying to do here in terms of our vision for this affiliate. And there's something really impactful with having a leader who is confident of saying, that wasn't good enough today, and we're together going to find a way to make it better.
I can't really imagine Steve Haydock on seminar staff and not a Flowmaster. How long was that for you?
It was about a year. I did about a year.
That's it?
Yeah.
That is very fast. What do you think allowed you to progress so fast?
They were just desperate for people in Europe, is really what it was.
No. I mean, to some extent, that's a little true, right? But you also, there are plenty that didn't become Flowmaster.
So, I mean, yeah, I mean, I've thought about that a lot. I think I was definitely in I had an advantage in the terms of I had managed people before. So, like, in my career, in education, I had managed people, right? So that definitely helped. And then the other thing as well is that I was pretty natural at the whiteboard. So at the whiteboard, giving lectures.
You're very good. Very good.
So I think, you know, when it came to that early progression, I was doing a really good job in my small groups. I had, like, good energy, good interaction, but also I progressed. Like, I don't think at any point was I ever, like held on any kind of lecture. I was always pretty much immediately passed through to the next lecture. So I got through the lectures very, very fast. And I remember really clearly, I had, like, when I got technique, which is the final lecture you get on the level one, they would be like, okay, I got the email, like, hey, you're going to give technique here, here, and here. And then when you complete this, the next seminar, your FMUI.
Oh, damn. They're handing out FMUI so when you're, like, going through your lectures. All right. Got it. All right.
Yeah. So it was like, and then it was like, now you have FMUI, like, 1, 2, 3 here. And it was, like, all laid out. So it was always just like, get this guy on the, you know, on the fast track for that. And I think at that time, in Europe, And remember, at this point, Europe was also covering right. the Far East, and we were also moving into like South Africa, Africa as well. At that point, there were only two other people who were flows. That was Carl Stedman and Yami Tikkanen. And, there was this, like, it was growing so rapidly, there was this need for someone else to step into the role. And then once that happened, it was, once I got signed up, I think it was, I think James Hobart actually signed me off as my final FMUI. And he was like, all right, here we go. Like, let's make this happen. And then I was just on the road nonstop for, every seminar out there. So it was,
how many it was a fast learning curve,
I think I've got to be close to 500. I don't know officially, but I would, the last right. trainer summit we had, I was at 380 something.
Yeah. Wow.
So I was close to 400 then. So yeah. I think I've got to be close to 500, I would say. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. We had, there was one year, I can't remember what year it was, maybe 2012, where we were doing midweek level twos. We were doing like level ones on the weekend, level twos. Yeah, midweek. And I think there was a year where I had like 60 plus seminars, because I was just like every weekend plus midweek. It was nuts. Yeah.
I got one last, because this is, so
go ahead.
Has there been anything? So you're helping us with you're one of the people on our business development side, Steve. And like, I'm curious, as you kind of step into that role from your previous roles, is there anything that was either surprising to you or not surprising about working with affiliate owners in this capacity?
Well, I mean, the biggest surprise, like this is probably going to be an ongoing joke of me joining the team, is, basically, the reason why I'm here is because you guys had done a podcast, and I think it was something to do with the coaches development, and like Jay had posted it, and then I commented on his post, just joking, like, are you hiring? Because at that point, I honestly only thought you guys were just talking crap to each other on a podcast. Didn't really have any other idea what you were doing, but I was like, this seems like fun.
That's not inaccurate.
So I made that like kind of joke, and I think Jay texted me back within like 60 seconds, and he was like, are you serious? And I was like, yeah, like what's going on? This seems like it's a cool thing. And then the next thing that kind of was like, this was interesting for me, was Jay was like, oh, well, I'll get our CEO to reach out to you. And I'm like, you guys have got a CEO? Like, what's going on here? I thought you guys were just talking crap. And then obviously I met Marcus, and I'm like, oh, this is a real thing. So then, like, since I've been in the loop, I'm constantly like, whoa, this is like way, way more than I thought it was initially. And that's partly, I'm not like big on, always into social media and all that kind of stuff. But what I discovered really quick was this was a very, very professional operation that has a ton of impact. And, the program's ability to work down those two tracks of coaching development and business development is like it's almost like a cheat code, right? It's like, if we get those two things dialed in, it's really, really difficult for an affiliate not to be successful if we bring diligent attention to the coaching and then the business, the business element. And what Best Hour has done through their education is they've created a pretty seamless track to get both those big ticket items dialed in, and allow affiliate owners to be like, okay, well, now I know the direction I need to be moving in. And I have this kind of rock star team around me that can provide a ton of guidance and also accountability, which I think is a big thing. Like there's a big accountability piece of like, okay, well, we're going to tell you this thing, but you also need to get this done. Like you've got to put the work in. So like that whole kind of unraveling and unpacking and like, meeting like Katie and like how much of a ninja she is on the operations side. And then, like what Lee's doing with support and all that kind of stuff, of like how much hard work there is going on behind the scenes as well. And it's not just you two like Muppets out there talking crap about stuff. I'm like, okay, this is a legit operation. And at that point, I don't think I've ever been more grateful to make a joke post on someone's Instagram than I have with the one that I made on Jay's that led me to eventually being asked to join the team.
I tell you what I hear, Jay. That was definitely Steve was very shocked that we were doing a good job. That's what I heard.
Well, I don't know if you remember this, Fern, but back like when we first started the podcast, maybe like 19,
April,
we'd be
19,
at the games judging, and Steve would like, yeah, Steve would just be joking.
That's
like,
right, I forgot.
We're gonna record a podcast. We're gonna record, like, remember, like, you're just joking, like, and it would kind of was a joke at the time because we were just, you know, only doing a podcast. But I think the big lesson is it takes a lot of work to hide how professional we are. Right? Like, we, I once saw this, I always remember this. You ever see something you remember? And it was like, Steven Tyler from Aerosmith once said, he was like, it's really expensive to look like you're homeless, like with the way he dressed, right? And it was the same for us. It's like, it's, we are professional behind the scenes, but going back to something you said earlier about the culture, right? It's like, we just like to have fun.
Yeah.
And if we have fun, our clients have fun. And if our clients have fun,
well,
their members have
well,
fun.
Well, as you're saying that, Steve, I recently listened to a podcast with the founder of Shopify on there. He had this crazy quote that reminds me kind of what you said. And the quote is, the complexity of the product should reveal itself over time. And I was like, oh, that's kind of the approach that we take is like, it's not like forward facing. It's, oh, it's this super complex thing. But like when you get behind every to a T, every person that's like come in, they've kind of like pulled the curtain back a little bit. They're like, holy shit, what are you guys doing over here? And I'm like, we're just working our faces off, man. And if you're cool with working your face off, and that was, I will be very upfront with this. Like one of the refreshing things, like when you came on, you know, let's be very candid. Like it's not unweird, but it's not weird, right? So like Steve was a mentor to both Jay and I and was like our boss on seminar staff. And he comes in with it. Yeah, that's yeah, not for
still
yeah,
is. Yeah. Well, for
but,
me at least.
But then when you came on the team, like it wasn't there was no weird vibes. Like you saw what was going on, like you were not at all there was no flinch about the work and like doing the work, because a lot of stuff we do on the back end is not fun. It's not sexy. Like it is just kind of like a grind type work to do it. And you just dove right in. And I was like, oh fuck, that's right. That's why I like Steve so much. Like, because he was just like, yeah, he's like, let's do that. And like the accountability piece that you talked about, you were like, yeah, then we need to make sure they actually fucking do their homework. And I was just like, yes, that's what I'm talking about. And, you know, so I appreciate that about you and your willingness to do that. And that's why this thing is so fun, kind of like you mentioned before.
Well, and like that's, you know, before coming on today, I was thinking through some things. And again, this is something that's worth unpacking is like, if you think about over the course of 10 years, because Joe was like, we've known each other for 10 years. If you actually think about how much time we've actually spent physically together in one location.
Dave.
In that 10-year period, it's actually a it's a days, right? And it's either been, you know, I think Fern, maybe I've done two or three seminars with you, I would say probably in 10 years. And Jay is probably the same number, right? And then we've had like time at the games where we've been like doing mad stuff, but we've been around each other. But then, you know, it caused me to reflect on like, okay, what was it that happened? Like in the time that we were together doing our thing, like what were the elements that led it to be for Jay and yourself, Fern, to be like, okay, this is someone who immediately can fit in with this team, because that when you think about the actual total amount of time, it's not a lot. So there's something to be said there for like, why is it that, you know, over a period of 10 years, there is this level of comfort around each other, because we do have, I would say, a high level of comfort based on compared to the total amount of time we spent together. And I think it doesn't really make sense.
But here's what I think. I think what you were alluding to earlier about the level of demand when you come through that seminar staff pipeline, and then you watch other people do it, and then you watch other people interact, and there's micro interactions that you observe, whether it's with another person on the team or whether it's a participant or something like that, you recognize people that are working really hard and are top-notch professionals. Like, there's just little tiny things that pop out to you and like, that dude or that girl is just a stud. Like, they just do the small things and they do them every single time, no matter what, and they deliver every single time. And that's why I think that it wasn't easy, because there was never like a, I wonder if it's going to work out, right? It was just like, no, that guy's a killer. He's, you know, if we were going to go fucking storm a mountain, you're like, we're bringing that guy. And those are the kind of people that we're looking for on the team, which is like, I'm never going to question, are they going to be there? I'm never going to question, are they going to put in the work? I'm never going to be concerned that they're not going to be a team player. Like, none of those things are in question, and everything else is easy after that, if you really think about it.
Yeah. And like that, again, I think is worth reflecting. I'm probably going to end up saying something that Jay is going to want to turn into another audio clip here, but I'm going to say it anyway,
get ready
to capture this. Is like, because you reference like me joining the team, like it could have been a weird dynamic, right? Of the fact that I have actually been a mentor to you guys going through the seminar staff experience. But I don't know if you remember, Fern, because you found out that you were going to FMUI at the same time my wife found out that she was going to go through the same process. And I remember reaching out to you, and I had a conversation with you. I think it was either text or on a call. And what I expressed to you was like, you were a person that I would happily follow if you were leading.
I remember that conversation. Seminar. That meant a lot. Yeah.
Because it was like one of the things that, you know, I put a lot of thought into leadership and what makes, you know, a good leader. And there's always this distinction in my head that I'm constantly wrestling around of like, a leader isn't someone that just wants to be in charge. And it's very easy to identify the people that want to be in charge of something as opposed to the person who actually would make a good leader. And, you know, one of the things that I always felt around you is that was your mindset. Like, I could put you in charge of something and you would do it and you would kill that role, but it wasn't about status. It wasn't about that. It was just about doing the thing. And this is where I'm going to say the thing which I might regret is like, I've always had the same feeling about Jay as well, of like, I would follow Jay, you guys have very, very different attributes and strengths, but ultimately there's an element of, with Jay as well, for me, is like, if he was running the ship and I was on the ship, I'm like, I'm all about it. It's going to be fun. It's probably going to be shots and it's going to be a good time. Right. But ultimately his desire to lead, your desire to lead, it doesn't come from just wanting to be in charge of people. It's like, hey, there's a vision here. And that is, when I see that in people, it's immediately apparent. And I knew that with you. And that's why I wanted to say to you with the FMUI thing of like, hey man, I would follow you, because having spent two or three seminars with you and being around you at the games, that was apparent. And then, coming into Best Hour and seeing the work you've done and the leadership both of you guys have exhibited has been, it's been incredible to see. And it's like, it makes me, I'm proud to be part of this team. And I've said it to Jay a couple of times. It's like, I'm really happy to be here as a soldier, like just put me to work, because there's something really refreshing about, having you guys spearhead this. And it's like, hey, I'm here to support and make the team the best we can. And, if ultimately, there's a point as this team grows and I get to help other people move up, then I would love to do that. But this is an easy ride for me. Like there's no better place, no place I'd rather be than doing this work with you guys.
Well, the feeling is mutual. I speak on Fern's behalf. That threw me off, because I thought you were only going to say nice things about Fern. And I was like, why did you tell me to clip this? And then you did. Cody, edit out the first part.
Well, Steve, what you don't know is that when Jay called you immediately afterwards, what he was thinking about is just like, Steve will probably do my work.
Yeah. And better.
Yeah.
And it's actually coming to fruition. Right? And, I think, I'm reminded of something that happened like a month ago. Like, Steve reached out and gave me feedback, which we immediately implemented, right? And it was like important I don't know. I think just because of our relationship and dynamic and everything you said, I'm like, I was thinking about it after. I'm like, I bet you there are other companies where like that wouldn't happen.
Most companies that wouldn't happen, I don't think.
Right. And yeah. And it wasn't like Steve is pulling rank over here. It was just more like, hey, if we're going to be better over here, I need to tell you this.
Yeah. Right? And like, I've reflected on that as well. And like, there is an element, and I think this is true of any organization, like as an organization grows, like fresh eyes and fresh perspective on things can bring a lot of clarity, right? You know, and I think that, and what you guys have done really, really well is, you encourage that. Like, you guys are constantly seeking feedback. You're constantly looking for ways to do things better. And that removes the barriers. You know, there's no sense of here of like anyone's got the perfect solution. It's like, hey, together we're going to work this out. And if we do this and it doesn't get better, hey, we scrap it. But we're never going to lose that mindset of just seeking the virtuosity, right? I think that's really what it is. And, you know, and as this beast, and it is a beast, it continues to grow and evolve. That communication, that level of feedback and transparency and, you know, commitment to making each other better and the team better is going to become even more important because, you know, there's a standard to be kept here now.
The standard is the standard.
No, dude, I'm just excited to have you on the team. There, I will say that I am a little, Jay's not hurt. He's very relieved. I'm a little hurt that people like you so much though. You know, it's like people are very happy to see Steve in the mix now. And I'm like,
so it was about 2008. I had the first coach. This dude, Matt, still a great friend, showed up one day from like a Globo gym background. He was doing CrossFit at a Globo gym, quickly got his level one and started coaching for free, of course, back then. And Donna, I remember vividly, Donna, one of my old, she's in her 80s now. So it was just like old members, but she was an older woman who I worked one-on-one with for years. Was like, I think I like Matt better than you. And she, like, Donna used to like kind of bust my balls a little bit. And I was like a little hurt for a second. And then I was like, I can go home now. I was like, this is great. Like, I love it. Like, I remember like those emotions running through me. I was like a little upset. And then like, this is great. Like you, like any team, like we hold over a lot of our team's heads, like be so good we can't get rid of you, right? And then create the next iteration of yourself, right? That's what it's all about. There's no jealousy. This is like, pumped it's that people love Steve. You know, I know you are as well, but it's funny. Steve, you know, is taking on business development calls and he has been on some of mine. And I'm like listening to him answer the question. I'm like, that was better than what I would have said. So yeah, it's all good. I mean, we didn't even touch on the fact that you've run successful affiliates, a successful jiu-jitsu schools, touring the world now teaching jiu-jitsu. You'll be in Boulder this year. I'm really pumped for that. And we are proud to, like, truly not just proud, like humbled, because, you know, as we've alluded to, like, I remember the first seminar I worked with you in Chicago, and I was like, oh, like, you guys remember back in the day, you'd get the trainer email, you'd be like pumped to see who's on it. And I was like, oh, I get to work with Steve. But then I had my first squats lecture and I was like, oh, I got nervous. And then it was just so good. It was so good. So this is awesome. And we're pumped to have you on the team.
It's a pleasure to be here. It's a pleasure.
Let's keep doing this thing. The standard is the standard, and a rising tide lifts all ships. So, Steve Haydock, we are proud to have you on the Affiliate U team.
Pleasure to be here. And I tell you guys, we're going to change the face and scope of affiliate success globally moving forwards. That's how much I believe in this program and what it's doing. And each day it's getting a little bit better. And, moving the needle for sure.
Thanks for checking out this episode of the Best Hour of Their Day podcast. We appreciate you listening and choosing to have us help you in your passion for coaching and affiliate ownership. You can find more episodes just like this on all podcast platforms. If you're interested in learning more, you can reach out to us on any social media platforms, or you can visit www.besthouroftheirday.com to book a call. If you found this episode helpful for you, please share it so that we can help other coaches and affiliate owners to help build a bigger and stronger CrossFit community. Thanks for listening.